correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com. Game on.
Welcome, Gamer Nation, to another exciting episode of Game On. This is episode uno, uno, uno. That's Roman numeros. So enjoy that there. This is Saturday, January 3rd, 2009. Oh, and welcome to the new year as well. Game On is your D20 Radio Network podcast for all things tabletop gaming related. Plus, we like to throw in a few bits about video games and other assorted things. We're made of awesome sauce. I'm your host, Brian, also known as Fiddleback on the forums. Playing the Costello to my Abbott today is my good friend and co-host, Andy.
Hey, Abbott!
How you doing today, Andy?
I'm doing fantastic. Gamer Nation, how the heck are you? Welcome to the new year. Welcome to the, I can hardly believe it, third episode of it, Game On.
It is amazing, isn't it? That we've got three of these.
On fire, like a something or other. I don't know.
Yes, something which burns a lot and causes some destruction.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. On fire.
That would be us. What are we doing today, Andy?
Today we're going to discuss card games. Yes, card games. You heard me right. Particularly what we like to refer to as buy once card games rather than collectible and trading card games, because we're going to save those for another show.
Oh, yes. Another show somewhere down the road. Far, far down the road.
Look, up on the road. Ahead.
Stop. Ahead. Yeah. All right, well, let's get on with it then. Here we go. Upkeep phase. It's time for the upkeep phase, where we hand out some kudos and pimp out some other shows on the D20 Radio Network.
Oh, we are pimping hard this week. Thank yous, starting with Richard3030 from the forums, gets a big kudo for his Game On t-shirt suggestion. Head on over to the forums and check it out. Let Richard know what you think and make some suggestions of your own if you are so inclined, because we really want a t-shirt of our own.
Yes, because I'm running out of shirts that work for me.
Yeah, you know, the Hawaiian thing only lasts for so long, and I'm not wearing a hula skirt, so.
Right, because the last time you wore her hula skirt, hurdy-hurdy, drink time, hello.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Last time you wore a hula skirt, it caught on fire.
It did.
Yeah. Okay, well, the D20 Radio Network is full of all sorts of gaming-related podcasts. If you enjoy our show, and I hope you do, you're sure to find more to enjoy by checking out the following casts. The Order 66 podcast has episode 48 up and ready for download. In this episode, they talk about building a cross-class character for Star Wars Saga Edition. There's lots of crunch in this one, plus a new segment for the show, which was quite interesting. So if you're interested in Star Wars Saga Edition, head on over and check it out.
I know. I'm interested in it.
Absolutely.
Also available on the D20 Radio Network, the Holocron went live with their latest episode. They talk about MMOs of the past and take live calls from the chat room. Hey, they even talked to some guy named Fiddleback on the air. I have no idea who he is.
Neither do I, but he sounds great.
Out. The Holocron is all about the upcoming Star Wars The Old Republic MMO. Give it a listen and tell Mostly Joe and GM Dave what you think of the show.
Yeah, that Fiddleback guy, he is smart like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, he's long sleeves, tie in the back, crazy. Rubber room.
Uh-huh. Same thing. That fine line between genius and crazy.
It is very fine.
Mostly Joe is talking about the brick archetype in the current episode of Meanwhile, the Super Gaming Podcast, which is available right now.
When?
Now.
Excellent.
Yeah. Upcoming issues of Meanwhile will continue to explore the archetype characters from superhero RPGs and comics. Also, don't forget to check out his special edition as well, where he talks to Hero Games, or Hero System Game. Yeah, never mind, I screwed that up. Rewind. Check out the special edition as well, as he talks to Hero Games designers and speaks about all sorts of things related to the Champions system. If you like wearing underwear on the outside, check out Meanwhile, the Super Gaming Podcast.
Do I have to be a superhero to wear my underwear on the outside?
No, it hasn't stopped you so far.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I'm just checking. I didn't know if there was an update somewhere that I was missing. So.
No, you're fine.
Okay.
As long as I don't catch you.
Radio Free Homlet lives!
Yay!
It is alive. Episode 11 of D20 Radio's Dungeons & Dragons 4th Edition podcast is all about the cleric character build, with nearly an hour of great advice on clerics of all stripes. Do clerics have stripes? That was
they
strange.
Used to have. They used to be in plaids and polka dots, but then they kind of stood out a little too much.
Okay, yeah. It's easier to pick them out that way.
Next week it's paisley.
Awesome. They've successfully used a healing surge and should be back on track, so give them a listen.
That's right. And hey, guess what? There's a new cast coming to the D20 Fold, the Small But Vicious podcast. Focuses on all things Warhammer fantasy roleplay related. Old School and the Baron already have two casts up for you to listen to, so check them out on iTunes and welcome them to their new home just as soon as GM Dave gets them all set up.
All these podcasts and more can be found where? Here on the D20 Radio Network homepage at www.d20radio.com. Just follow the links off the front page to access all these fine shows. You can find our forums there as well, because you need to come check us out, where you can share your love of all things gaming with our totally excellent, awesome, stupendous, wonderful community.
That's right. They're like totally awesome.
Awesome, dude. They're superfluous.
That's right. Totally. Oh, yeah. Hey, guess what? Let's not forget Nick at Crazy Custom Tees, where you can buy D20 Radio t-shirts. Just follow the D20 Radio swag thread and see what he has to offer. Buy a shirt from your favorite cast and help support the entire network. We'll even have a shirt eventually, I'm told, someday, once we conceptualize our paradigm.
Paradigm, that's 20 cents.
Yeah, it's paradigms. Thank you very much. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Bits and Pieces.
This is our news segment called, you guessed it, Bits and Pieces, where we share with you some of the latest bits of exciting news and pieces of information from around the gaming world. Clever how we named it that.
Yeah, we're pretty good. In mid-March 2009, Mayfair Games will release Catan Geographies, Germany. An English language version of the Dice Siedler von Catan Deutschland edition, which I'm pretty sure if anybody German listens to this cast, they're now laughing and rolling on the floor.
I know I am.
Ich bin ein Wiener Schnitzel. Cosmos released the German edition in October 2008. Catan Geographies Germany uses the basic Catan game system of resource gathering, trading, and building, but the action takes place in Germany rather than a fictional land. Each player starts the game with town halls in three cities, then builds roads to reach neighboring cities in order to build unique German landmarks, which provide special awards in addition to victory points. Building additional town halls gives a player more chances for gaining resources and claiming longest road, largest army, and special VP cards based on Germany's history. I'm not going to go for the... No. I'm going to leave that one alone. Catan Geographies Germany is, oh man, narrowly avoided some trouble right there. Wow. Catan Geographies Germany is for 3 to 4 players, ages 12 and up, with a playing time of 60 to 90 minutes and a price of $55. Man, the letters we would have got.
Wow.
Yeah.
That could have been dangerous. Mm-hmm. Look here, Bits and Pieces is a new print magazine that debuts in February 2009 and will be published 3 times a year. Each issue will be 40 pages and includes full color reviews of 10 games. From classics to fillers to newly released titles, you can download a sample PDF from www.bits-and-pieces.org.uk. That includes reviews of 3 games, one of which is Fearsome Floors. You may have heard us speak of this game. From Bits and Pieces website, subscription cost £10, 20, depending on where you're located in the world.
That's right.
And for those of you who can do the conversion thing, you can figure that out in U.S. dollars or Canadian or Deutschmarks or, you know,
yen.
Lower Slobovian, yeah. Whatever they
say. Damn, lower Slobovians. Yeah, and fair enough, it's not related to us in any way. We just like the name. Hey, guess what, guys?
What?
We're up on iTunes.
Huh, really?
Yes. It's huzzah. Very cool.
Huzzah.
Huzzah, huzzah. Hootie hoo, hip hip hooray, yeehaw. Yeah, we went live on iTunes, what was it, Wednesday night?
I believe so, something,
yeah, something like that. And we should be searchable sometime in the extremely near future. Like maybe later tonight or possibly Sunday. I don't know. Oh. It's all mystical and apple-y and, you know, up to them.
Yeah, well, there's a plumber out there somewhere connecting our tubes.
Right, connecting our tubes, because that's what plumbers do. They connect tubes.
Yes.
Oh, well. You're fired. Yeah, for the moment, we've got the announcement up on the main page of D20 Radio, and there is a link within that announcement you can click on to pop us up in your iTunes player, and you can subscribe to us from there until we're able to be found via their somewhat nasty little search mechanism.
Yeah.
But we're there. That's what counts.
We are there.
We are there, indeed.
Have our own little roadmap here pretty quick.
That's right.
If you're interested in more news of the gaming world, including additional details on these stories and more, be sure to visit www.boardgamenews.com and www.gamingreport.com, two of the finest sources of gaming news available on the interwebs.
The interwebs. La, 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 la. The interwebs. There goes half the listeners right there.
Yeah.
Say, I'm looking for some sort of abstract strategy game, something with possibly parasitic conflict or bidding and economics, something with majority control and mass marketing, min-maxing that'll make people want to run away in fear and not play anything other than rock, paper, scissors. Have you got anything like that?
What the heck did he just say? Time to define our terms, Gamer Nation. We use a lot of fancy schmancy words on the cast, and we want you to be in the race with us as we zoom around the track. Don't be discombobulated or flummoxed. Stick these in your brain pan and follow along.
Discombobulated, flummoxed.
Right.
I just got a cramp.
Well, perhaps if you had some beer and pretzels.
Ooh, indeed. Mm. I think this is something Gamer Nation will be able to associate with. Beer and pretzels game. Noun. A game so random that long-term strategies are nearly impossible. And with such a goofy theme that it is played as a humorous diversion rather than a real competition. Frequently, these games feature several mechanisms that can interact with each other in surprising ways, not unlike the 2008 Olympics.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Yeah, and our second term is filler. Noun. A game with very simple rules and an extremely short playing time. This type of game is frequently used between heavier games. Both these definitions come to us from BoardGameGeek.com, and we'd like to thank them. And that's your prep, Gamer Nation. Keep them in mind. There may be a quiz later.
You said nothing about a quiz.
I never. It's a pop quiz.
Thanks.
Pop! We sure do like board games around here. Big, meaty, hard board games. Wait a minute, that sounds a bit dirty.
That was wrong on so many levels.
Yeah. Well, sometimes, and I know this is hard to believe, we don't have time to play a full-length board game. Other times, we just want something a bit lighter. And at still other times, we're just killing time until something better comes along. That's when we like to play card games. And by card games, we don't mean poker. God, who'd want to play poker with us?
I have got the best, most awesomest poker face ever.
Yeah, right. It looks like it's been clubbed.
In spades.
But you're just a diamond in the rough.
True enough. I hardly understood what he was saying.
Oh, dear.
Okay. Lost it. Nope, there goes my toboggan. Rosebud.
You call it what you want. I still call it the flaming death trap. Okay, so we should define here, not define so much as explain here, that we're not talking about CCGs in this episode, collectible card games, trading card games, or anything like that. We're talking about those kind of card games. You can go out, go to your favorite local game store, or friendly local game store, or other words. Anyway, I can think of about 17 things you could plug into that F and have it make sense.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Anyway, we're talking about the ones you can just go out and buy, and have a complete total game experience without having to buy expansions or collect different cards or anything like that.
Is that possible?
That is possible, and in fact, sometimes it's actually the best way to do things.
My goodness. The days and days of sleepless nights worrying about having to put a deck together for Magic, the Gathering.
Yes.
French card game I hate so much.
Magic, the Gathering.
Gathering.
Yes. All right. So here's the differences. We're going to talk a little bit about the differences between a collectible card game and what we're calling a pay-once card game. The most obvious difference is that CCGs are, this is what the first C stands for, collectible. You go out and you buy them, you do not get all the cards you need to play the game well.
That's silly.
That's very silly. These are the ones you can sink hundreds and hundreds of dollars into. Your first house payment, your first new car, the baby's clothes, whatever. You can pour those right in there and still not have all the cards that it would take to be competitive with the game.
And that's before they come out with the next expansion.
Right. In general, you have about 3 months to do that before you're behind again.
Yeah.
Whereas pay-once card games are non-collectible. You get everything you need right in the box, ready to go, ready to play.
Seems so much better.
It does. And in fact, most of the pay-once type card games, you can get for an initial investment of $20, $25 max.
Brilliant.
I know, it seems so smart, and I don't know why anyone would ever want to do the collectible thing, but there are those, and we will deal with you later. The other difference is that if an expansion is coming, for a CCG, it's a random expansion. Again, you don't get all the cards for the expansion. Whereas in a pay-once card game, if they do an expansion, it's an all-in-one expansion. You get every card you need to bring you up to speed with the expansion for the game. Usually at a much cheaper cost than the original game was to purchase.
Again? brilliant.
I know. It's just amazing. It's so inexpensive and so nice and so cuddly and so friendly.
Somebody out there likes us.
That's right. The other main advantage of doing a pay-once card game versus a CCG? CCG?
Munchy G, horse, cute and cuddly.
Oh, dear. Mostly Joe just fell off his chair because he remembers where that's from.
He hurt himself.
Yeah. One of the other big differences is you don't have what we like to call rule reboots in pay-once card games. In other words, they're not going to change rules or add rules or, you know, mess around with rules or anything like that in a pay-once card game. Whereas in CCGs, they do that practically every time a new expansion comes out.
Well, they wouldn't do such a thing.
Yeah, there's so much to learn in each new expansion, and you know, things that used to work don't work anymore, and things that you never knew about all of a sudden are brand new, and, you know, who cares?
Well, it's kind of like getting married. They change the rules.
That's right.
Wife aggro. Nobody told me about that one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a secret. It's okay, GM Dave. We understand.
We understand. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
That's right. Until you get married to it, and then it's every day. And there's no comfy chair.
There is not. It's the rack for you, my friend.
That's right. So, pay-once card games tend to have standard fixed rules that don't change necessarily when a new expansion comes out. They can be built on, and sometimes what you will encounter is new rules, but you're not going to find your old rules becoming obsolete, or you're not going to find that entire sets of cards have suddenly become useless, and you can't play with them.
Yeah, it seems I recall somebody else doing that at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of people. Okay. So those are what we see as the main advantages to pay-once card games versus collectible card games. Can you think of any others, Andy, that you might want to mention here real quick?
Sure, throw a curveball at me.
Yeah, I like curveballs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that wasn't a curveball, it was a grenade!
All right, so those are what we see as the three main advantages. So now what we're going to do is we're going to talk a little bit about card games we like. And in fact, we're actually going to talk a lot of bit about card games we like.
A lot of bit?
A lot of bit. Our first example of a pay-once card game that we think is really cool and really enjoyable is a game called Citadels. In Citadels, you are looking to build a collection of buildings, and each building is worth a certain number of points from 1 to 8. And the game ends when somebody has built 8 of these buildings. And each card can generate income for you, which is related to the number of gold pieces you will collect at the end of each turn, which in turn you will reinvest in building new cards, or new buildings. And that sounds fairly, uninteresting. But here's where it does get interesting is that you have 8 different roles that people can take in each turn. Roles like the assassin, who gets to kill another player. There's the king, who gets to actually run the game. There's the bishop, who gets extra money from religious buildings. There's a merchant, who gets extra money from commercial buildings. There's 8 roles altogether, and each of them does something slightly different. And what happens is, at the start of each round, you pass these roles around the table. And each person gets to select one role and then pass the rest of the stack on to the next individual. The thing is, nobody knows who's got what role until each role is called, because you play in the sequence indicated by your role. The assassin always gets to go first. He picks one player who he kills, or one role, actually, that he kills at the start of each round. Then after that, the roles progress down on through number 8. Your turn doesn't come around until your role is called, and then you get to take all your actions for the turn. The roles have an interesting way of interacting with each other in that some actually key off of what other players are doing. Like, for example, there's the warlord, who is allowed to destroy one building of any other players in the game. There's another role, and it's not coming to the top of my mind right off the bat. But it's a... It's an architect, that's what it is. It's the architect who gets to build two buildings at a time. As your rolls come around, you get to take your actions, build sections of your city, and the first to eight sections wins the game. The fun of the game is really in this roll selection portion, and that's what makes the whole thing interesting in terms of being able to play. It'll handle up to eight players. There are rules for as little as three players. It does not really work as a two-player game, though. There's just too many rolls to deal with. So it's from three to eight players. It's a very fun game, and one which I recommend checking out and playing if it sounds interesting to you. And hopefully it does.
It does, or they wouldn't be here.
That's right. That's the whole point, isn't it?
Exactly.
Okay, the next game I want to talk about is Felix the Cat in the Sack. People may not be familiar with the term cat in the sack. It's equivalent to the American term buying a pig in a poke. What it means is you're buying something without actually having seen what it is that you're buying. The game description is as follows. With their mice, the players attempt to grab the famous cat in the sack. In the sack, there are both good cats and bad cats. Each player can also put a dog or rabbit into the sack instead of a cat, allowing players to bluff one another. At game end, all positive cats and mice count plus points, but negative cats count minus points. And at the end of the game, the person with the highest total wins. The way it works is as follows. Each player has a set of cards in their color, and you can have up to four players. Each card has a different value cat or rabbit or one of two different dogs on it. And the game is played in nine rounds. Each round, each player selects one card from their hand and puts it in what's called the sack. The idea being that you want to be able to claim a sack with a high value of cats in it and avoid sacks with low value cats in it. And this is somewhat easier said than done, because you are not going to know what the other players have put in the sack. You'll know what yours is, but you won't know what theirs is. Once a sack has been filled, bidding round begins, where you bid the number of mice, which are really just little plastic chips, that you would put into the sack based on what you know about the sack so far. When everybody else has passed, the last person to have made a bid collects mice tokens that are his payment, basically, for being the last one to bid in that group, or on that sack. And then the first card in the sack is turned over. Everybody has a better idea of what's in the sack, and the bidding continues again, with the exception that the person who went out the last round is not allowed to bid on any subsequent rounds for that particular sack. And this continues until there's only one player left who is eligible to bid on the next to last card, all other cards having been revealed. That person wins the sack, pays in their bid, everybody else recovers their bid, and then you make allowances for any dogs that are in the sack. Large dogs chase away high-value cats. Small dogs chase away low-value cats. And their points are set aside, and a new sack is built. And this happens nine times. It's a fun little game. It keeps everybody engaged. There's lots of player interaction as you try to figure out what your opponents are doing. And you watch their bids and, you know, keep track of all that kind of stuff. And it's all around just a really enjoyable little game. And Andy, I think you've played that a couple of times.
Yeah, it is interesting because you're constantly trying to figure out, you know, who's going to put what into the sack, depending on what round it is. You know, you've got your high value cats, your low value cats. You've got the rabbit, which is just a bluff card, pretty much. And each round, you're trying to figure out what's going to be in the sack and give you an idea of what to bid on or how to bid. And what you're going to get out of it. So it makes for an interesting little game.
Mm-hmm. This next one's pretty interesting. Why don't you tell us about it, too?
Okay, let me set this up for you. Dun 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 dun. Oh, I don't know where that was going.
Horse.
Has absolutely nothing to do with it.
Horse! Little Joe's in trouble again!
This next game is called, you guessed it, Bonanza. This is the first of the Bonanza family of games. There's got Pa Cartwright and Jeb.
No.
Oh, okay.
and it should be pointed out right now that Bonanza is not spelled the way you think it's spelled. And in fact, we're probably not even pronouncing it correctly, because it's B-O-H-N-A-N-Z-A. B-O-H-N being German for bean.
Bean. Yeah. Yes, Bonanza, or something of that nature. Cards are quite colorful depictions of beans in various descriptive poses. Sounded strange.
Yeah.
Object is to make coins by planting fields or collecting sets of these cards and harvesting them. Very straight, very simple, straightforward, simple game. But there's a lot of interaction in this game between the players. There's a lot of trading that goes on. You collect sets of beans. Each bean is worth a different number of coins, depending on how many you have. And at the end of the game, you never want to see another bean again. Well, but it is a lot of fun.
You've forgotten the one most important part of Bonanza.
What part is that?
You cannot rearrange your hand.
This is true. You have to play the cards as you have drawn them into your hand.
Right.
This makes for some very interesting as well as very difficult plays. If you've got five of one kind of bean in front of you, and the next type of that bean is four cards down in your hand, and you want to harvest those beans, you've got to find a way to get rid of the rest of those cards. And one way of doing that is planting another row of beans, which I believe you can only have, what, three fields at a time?
Three max, yeah.
Yeah. So if you've got a couple of fields out there already and you need to start another field to get this other card into play, you may have to harvest a set of beans that you really didn't want to just so you can get run through your deck. And so it makes it quite interesting at times.
Yeah. And the other way you can get rid of beans that are not in the sequence you want is to offer them in trade to other players.
Indeed. You can trade them to other players, trying to get rid of them, trying to better your hand and further your bean harvesting.
Yeah. The difficulty becomes that the other players may not actually want the beans you have. And if they do accept a trade from you, they have to immediately plant those beans in their field as soon as your turn's over.
Right.
So you've got to offer them something they want.
Right. In order to get rid of some of this stuff, the other player is going to have to want it. And like you said, once they get it, they have to play it right there and then. It doesn't go into their hand. It goes into play. So it's a very, very interesting mechanic that the game presents to you.
Right. It's, and the artwork on this thing is really kind of funny. It's beans doing all kinds of different things. You got black-eyed beans, which are in boxing rings, and you got a big black eye, and you got, you know, wax beans, which are you know, somewhat drunk. Coffee beans, cocoa beans. It's got all kinds of different beans in it, and it's really a fun game to play with. I would think 4 to 5 people.
Yeah, the more players, it actually works out a little bit better. Yeah. The fewer you get, the less interaction you get, because there's fewer people to trade with. Yeah. So it definitely plays better with more people.
Yeah, there are 2-player rules, but it's not the recommended setup. You want at least 3 people, and like I said, about 4 or 5 is the right target.
Where it really starts to hit it, yeah.
The next game we want to talk about is a game called Guillotine. Basically, Guillotine is from Wizards, actually, Wizards of the Coast. And it's a game set in the French Revolution. What it is you have a series of cards in a row, and these cards are nobles. You'll have, like, Marie Antoinette, Robespierre, you know, commoners, peasants, and the infamous piss boy.
I don't know what you're saying.
I don't know either. And you're executing these, because at the head of this line sits an actual folded-up cardboard guillotine, and whichever noble is at the front of the line at the end of your turn is executed. And you get hit that card, and each card is worth a number of points. The thing is, each card in your hand is an action card, and each action card has its own specific way in which it manipulates the order of the nobles in the line. Some allow nobles to skip ahead, some allow them to change places, some of them reverse the order of the line, some of them take all the nobles out and let you shuffle them up and relay them down. And there's a lot of manipulation of the order here to get the cards that you want to the front of the line. Because, again, some cards are worth positive points, and some cards are worth negative points. Also in your mix of nobles are cards that interact with other nobles. For example, there's a soldier. The more soldiers you have, the more points each individual soldier is worth. There's cards like Marie Antoinette works. She's worth more points if she goes with the king. you've got a whole bunch of different things going on here that you kind of have to keep track of. It plays extremely quickly. It's very easy to learn because the instructions for how to play each card are right on the cards themselves. You do this for 3 days of executing these nobles. At the end of 3 days, or essentially 3 rounds, whoever's got the highest total carries the day. They win. And it's just a lot of fun, and the artwork's really good on it. And it makes a great filler game or beer and pretzels game.
Yes, coming out ahead was never quite so good.
Woo! He made a funny. Stop ahead. Speaking of games that play with the order of the line.
Yeah, this is kind of the Guitar Hero of card games, or, well, maybe not. This game's called Megastar, and you are a promoter for bands, and you're trying to get your bands into the highest position. So at the end of the game, when you score, if you have more corresponding cards for that band, you'll score more points. There's 7 musical acts, which are arranged in a column on the table, and every time you get dealt cards for that turn, you play a card where you want to increase the band's rating. And each player does this in turn and pushes certain bands up and pushes other bands down. And it's a very simple game, but it's very difficult to anticipate where the bands are going to go and where they're going to wind up.
Right.
Because you've got to pay attention to where the band is at, where it might wind up, where you don't want it to wind up, and the number of cards you have corresponding to that band. Now, in order to raise a band's popularity, you have to play cards of that band's corresponding color. But in order to score off of that band, you have to have those cards in your hand as well. So while pushing the band up, you've got to keep a few cards in reserve so you can try and possibly make a score off of it. So therein lies the trouble with the game.
Yeah, it's really difficult to maintain the balance between pushing a band just far enough so that you'll score decent points off it and still retain cards in your hand that are going to allow you to score those points. And it's a balancing act. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, because every time a band moves up, it scores when it moves to the head of the...
No, it's at the end of the game, yeah, based on its position.
Oh, end of the round, yeah.
Yeah, at the end of the game, based on its position, is when you start scoring the points. So you're gonna play this until you're out of cards in the deck, and that will signal the end of the game, and then you'll score your points, and whoever's got the most wins.
Wow, just like all these other games.
Yeah, it's amazing. The most points wins.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who came up with that one?
I don't know. That was. I don't know. That seems like a basic mechanic. Next game we want to talk about is a game called Flux.
What?
F-L-U-X-X. I knew you were going to say that.
Okay.
Yeah,
just check.
Okay. Uh-huh. Check our rating. and before I tell you what Flux is all about, I'm going to say that this game is either loved or hated. It's you're not going to be in between on this one. It's not going to be just, it's okay. You're either going to love it or hate it. Because Flux is a game where the cards themselves determine the current rules of the game. By playing cards, you change numerous aspects of the game, how to draw cards, how to play cards, how to win. It's just, really, the rules are right on the card, but they change every time a card is laid down. They change hand size, they change how many you can play, they change what you can collect, what you can't collect. It's chaos in a deck of cards, basically. It's very simple artwork, and the faster you play the game, the better the game is, I think. Because if you spend time just kind of thinking about what you're gonna do and how to do it and all that, you're gonna bog down and it's gonna get confusing. But if you just play it as quickly as you can, it seems to work best that way.
And it seems to be quite a few different versions of Flux now. It's the same basic principle of the game, but you've got a lot of different. Themes to them, I guess, now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's Zombie Flux, there's Monty Python and the Holy Grail Flux, there's Vanilla Flux, there's Family Flux, there's Stoner Flux, there's... I don't know, there's probably 2 or 3 more I'm forgetting right at the moment. And they all work on the same basic principle, though. Just, play what you got and see if you can accidentally win.
Yeah, definitely a filler and or beer and pretzels.
Yeah,
type
no, this is strictly beer and pretzels. You're gonna want something to drink while you're playing this thing. We enjoy it, but it's not something you're gonna drag out all the time. It takes I would think, depending on how the cards go, I've seen it go for as quick as one round, one round and game over. To almost half an hour, 45 minutes of play.
Yeah, and it, like you say, it all comes down to what cards you got and what the current set of rules are, which are dictated by the card that just been played. So yeah. It changes constantly.
And you will find yourself accidentally winning the game just because somebody else played a card that met some requirement that you had in your hand. You'll just like, oh, well, I win. There you go.
Woohoo!
Yeah, it sneaks up on you. But it is a lot of fun if taken in the right frame of mind with the right attitude.
And that's what it's all about.
Yep.
Attitude.
Attitude. Speaking of attitude.
This next game's got a lot of attitude. It's got a strange name. Some cool artwork. Some interesting things in it. The name alone should get everybody to rush out and buy this because it's just the coolest thing ever. The Pink Godzilla Dev Kit.
Oh, yeah.
If that doesn't give you a brain cramp, nothing will. Quality or quantity? Racing to build parody video games such as Pinky Gear Solid and Elder May Cry, two of my favorites. You play the role of a game developer competing for the components needed to create games in four genres: RPGs, fighting, music, and first-person shooter games.
Oh, yeah.
And this was a really neat little find that you picked up. I had seen it before on the internet, and I think had glanced at it momentarily at our local game store, and you managed to pick it up before I did. Why I never grabbed it, I'm such a Godzilla freak, and Pink Godzilla is even cooler. So, just a lot of fun to play. The mechanics of the game are really interesting. You've got little upgrade cards that you can play that, help you score points, do different things with the other players. You need to come up with a title for your game. You have to have characters for your game. You've got abilities and, weapons, vehicles, and things of that nature. And it just really plays out nicely.
Yeah, and it should be said, this is probably the most CCG-like of the games we're going to talk about.
It really is. Although it is not collectible, it does play out quite a bit like one, whereas you are trying to get series of cards into your hand in order to play these out and make a game, develop a game. So,
yeah, and it was a lot of fun. We really enjoyed it. It has cards that boost your points based on what's in play, and it also has cards that affect your opponent and knock his score down. It's very interactive. It's a lot of fun, and I would recommend it if you want to try a pay once card game. And you want something that's similar to a CCG, Pink Godzilla Dev Kit is probably one of the best ones to check out.
Yeah, it really was a lot of fun, and the plays on words on the artwork and the names of the games and stuff are really cute, which really play into the game well.
Mm-hmm. This next one's a fun one. It's called Bang. It's a card game that recreates the old-fashioned spaghetti western shootout, with each player randomly receiving a character card to determine special abilities and a secret role card to determine their goal. You've got basically four different roles. You've got a sheriff, whose job is to kill all outlaws and a renegade. You have a deputy, whose job is to protect the sheriff and kill any outlaws. You have outlaws, whose job it is to kill the sheriff. And you have a renegade, whose job it is to be the last person standing.
Which is all we ever want to be in life.
Yeah. the game is really cool, and it plays, the more players you have, the better the game is. It'll handle up to 8 players. And it's not, I don't believe there's a really good way to play it 2-player, certainly nothing official. So you're looking for 3 to 8 players, and the more the better. It's just a hoot. Things go on so quickly, and so many crazy things are in there, and jokes based on, old westerns and whatnot. It's really a super fun game. You've got horses, you've got different types of guns, you've got... Oh, the healing item in the game is beer.
Well, that seals the deal there.
Yeah. If you take damage, if you get shot, you have a series of bullets that mark how much life you have. Every time you get shot, you lose a bullet. Every time you drink a beer, you get a bullet back. So there's lots of beer drinking going on.
It's in the Old West, I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm wounded. Give me a beer. Oh, I feel better. Thank you. Yeah, okay. Anyway, so there's a lot of interaction. There's a lot of opportunity for people to mess with each other. And the hoot of the thing is that nobody knows who anybody is until they're dead. The only person at the table whose role is revealed is the sheriff. So it's up to everybody else to either figure out who everybody else's role is or to hide their own role. Because if you come out as an obvious outlaw, then, of course, the sheriff and the deputy and the renegade are going to target you. Just as if you come out as the obvious renegade, then you're in trouble from everybody else. it's really kind of hard to describe because there's not really a whole lot of other games like it. Maybe Werewolf, but that's more of a live-action sort of game thing going on. But, yeah, Bang is a really a lot of fun. And there's several expansions for it that improve the game and give you other options and more characters and things like that. In fact, one of the expansions, and I can't remember which one it is right now, if you're killed in the game, there's a card that lets you come back for a couple of rounds and take shots at people who, may have shot you. As a ghost. So, yeah, there's lots going on in this game. It's a lot of fun. And if you have a group of people who want to sit down, play a card game, and just have a great laugh the whole time they're playing it, Bang is the card game I would recommend.
Yeah, this one of the neat things about it, like you said, it's not really like any other game. And that's what gives you, part of the unique experience out of the game. And the expansions and things that you can add to it to add to them. The latest version that they came out, I think, was called Bang the Bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an entire series of cards from the game. And I think you even get a little tin star or something that comes with it. But it all comes encased in this big plastic bullet, so it holds everything for you.
Yeah.
Really, just a little gimmicky type of thing, but it's really neat to have, so.
Yep. Yeah, if you are interested in playing Bang, I recommend Bang the Bullet as the version you should probably get at this time.
Yeah, because you just pick everything up all in one shot, and it's not very badly priced, as I recall, $30 or $40 at the most. So
yeah, it's pretty reasonable. Yeah,
it's actually, I hate to say it, but it's a good bang for the buck. So
it hurts.
Yeah, I was going to say it.
yes. Only a man of your caliber would.
Yeah. Oh.
Right.
God, there's a joke there, and I just can't come up with it.
That's all right. It's all right. Move on.
On to our next game, Kung Fu Fighting.
Kung Fu Fighting.
Kung Fu Fighting. This is a card game that simulates an all-out brawl between 2 to 6 Kung Fu masters. Players are dealt a hand of cards, which includes attacks, attack enhancements, weapons, blocks, chi restoration, which is healing, and fighting stances. You've got all of the typical fighting stances for Chinese kung fu fighting. You've got the crane, the dragon, the monkey, the tiger, and the snake, and of course, my favorite, the drunken stance.
Woohoo!
And that should appeal to most of us here at Gamer Nation.
Dun, dun, dun.
Each stance adds to your fighting abilities. It gives you bonuses against certain other stances while taking negatives against other ones. It gives you plus to your how fast you are, or your punches and kicks and things of that nature. You've got weapons that you can add in, which give you bonuses. And one of my favorite cards is, "Your Kung Fu is weak." This is one that Brian played on me and just completely wiped out a, multi-hit combo I had going on here. I'd bounced off the ceiling and across the room and, tap danced on somebody's forehead already and was headed for Brian, and no, your kung fu's weak. It just completely blocks everything you've lined up to lay down on your opponent and just, makes you look like a sap.
oddly, it's my favorite card as well.
yeah, I kind of figured that. It even comes with a blank card, so you can make up your own moves and stuff. You know, like the flaming squirrel nunchucks of death or something of that nature that can't be blocked. You know, sets your opponent on fire and demoralizes him. So
plays with his nuts. What? It's a squirrel. What's funny about that? Why is that funny?
I don't know. It just is.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. But anyways, it's a cute little game from a little company called Slugfest Games. They make a couple of different card games of that nature. There's a few updates for Kung Fu Fighting, but just right out of the box for 2 to 6 players, it can be a lot of fun. And the more players with this one, the more fun it can be, because there's actually a couple of cards in there that you can attack multiple players at once. So.
Mm-hmm. Excellent choice.
I suggest it.
Okay. Next game is called Lost Cities, and we talked about this one in the forum a bit when we were answering some questions. It's a two-player game, so two-player only, and it's from the Cosmos two-player series. The object is to mount profitable expeditions to one or more of the 5 different lost cities, and these include things like Atlantis, El Dorado, Shangri-La, places like that. Okay, fictional, not really real cities. But basically, you are an archaeologist going out to find the lost city, and you advance your expedition by playing cards with a numerical value on them. Each city expedition has its own color cards, and they just play on themselves. The thing of it is, I think it's a 104-card deck, and both players work off the same deck. So sometimes your opponent will have the cards you need, and sometimes you'll have the cards they need. You get basically 2 choices with your hand of cards. You either play 1 card to an expedition, advancing that expedition, or you discard 1 card to its color's discard pile. Then you draw a card, and it's your opponent's turn. You start with nothing in any expedition. And any expedition you start by laying a card down in it automatically becomes worth minus 20 points. So you have to play enough cards in a given expedition that you can get over that minus 20 point hump and build into positive points. Otherwise, it's going to count against you. Cards are numbered from 1 to 10, I believe, and their values are additive. You know, 10 plus 9 plus 8 plus 7, okay, all the way through. You have to play cards in numerical order, which means if you have an expedition that has, say, a 1, 2, and then a 5 and a 6 in it, you cannot go back and play the 4. It's useless to you at that point because you've passed its place. What really hangs this up is your opponent is probably the one who's hanging on to the 4 you need, and he knows it. So he's not going to put it anywheres on the board for you. Not in a discard pile, not, anywhere else that you can get at it. So you can spend a lot of time fishing through the deck looking for one card that you need to make your points positive, and it could be sitting there in your opponent's hand, and he won't do anything with it until you've gone past it, and then all of a sudden it'll turn up, and you'll curse and say bad words. Not that we ever say bad words.
Oh, no, not at all.
Not at all. The other thing of it is there are 2 what we call handshake cards for each color. Or no, 3 handshake cards for each color. And what these do is double the value of the expedition. They have to be played first before you play any other number. Problem is, if you play a handshake card and the expedition ends up being worth negative points because you didn't get over the minus 20 hump, well, that's still going to double the value of that expedition. So if you're minus 4 points and you've got a couple of handshake cards down there, well, you're looking at minus 16 points because each handshake doubles the value. That's pretty harsh. You got to know that you're going to go full on that expedition before you put those handshake cards down. Otherwise, you're taking a very big chance. You usually play 3 rounds of Lost Cities, with the total score at the end of 3 rounds being the one that determines the winner. So you can have a couple of bad expeditions and then have a really good one. A little strategy tip for you guys, don't try to start every expedition. Pick 2 or 3 that you're strong in and work those. Then if you get those completed successfully, think about starting 1 more, maybe. Usually by then you're pretty much down to the bottom of the deck. The game ends when you run out of cards in the draw deck. So, pretty simple. a lot of fun. Can be very strategic and makes a great couples game. Because for some reason, the ladies like Lost Cities. I don't know why.
Yeah, one of the nice thing about the Cosmos series is they are specifically two-player games. And I've noticed a lot of the games that you and I like to play require at least three players, and it's sometimes difficult, nigh impossible, to get a third sentient being to show up on time to play a game.
Right.
So
well, you can get three people, but it's the sentient part that's difficult.
Sentient part that always throws everybody. Yeah. So the Cosmos two-player series is really nice for things of that nature, and they've got a fairly large library now of the two-player games. So
yeah.
You've got a lot to draw from.
Yeah. Now, if Lost Cities wasn't quite simple enough for you, then let me recommend Coloretto. 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 This is even simpler. There are a number of multicolored cards. You draw a card and play it to a row, or you take a row. That's it. It don't get any simpler than that. You score points for collecting cards of the same color. The more color, more cards you have in a given color, the more points that color is worth. You play each round until the deck is empty, and the game lasts, I believe it's three rounds total, where everybody gets to play three times, basically. You will not believe how happy people will be to introduce you to the screw you factor in this game. Because you will start some colors, and you know, maybe you'll have red going, and you'll look at a stack of cards as it comes around to being your turn, you go, oh, there's two reds in there. I can get those. Yeah, well, somebody else is going to notice that too, and they're going to play maybe a blue, which you don't have any of, or a yellow, which you don't have any of, on top of that. And by the time it gets to you, those two reds are buried between or behind three or four other cards that you don't want. Because if you don't have enough cards in a given color, you lose points. It's lovely the way it works. There's a couple of wild cards, and there's some other special cards that will improve your scoring opportunities. But it really is just pull a card off the pile, lay it down somewhere. When you see a pile you like, pick it up. That's as easy as it gets. It'll handle, I think, up to four players, and it works well with two. It's amazing how many people will just take to this game. It takes all of about 5 minutes to learn how to play, and it makes for a great filler, and it's good for beer and pretzels. Altogether, I would say game play time on this thing is probably about 20 minutes, and it's wildly fun. So, that's basically the whirlwind overview of pay-once card games that we like to play. And do you have anything you would like to add, Andy?
The Bonanza theme song or something of that nature. But dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-da-dun-dun.
Oh, sorry. Carried away there. It's infectious.
Indeed. No, it's card games can be a nice step away from any of the other board games because they can be easy to play, easy to set up, quick to get into. You know, if you don't have time to sit down and play a protracted battle of 3 or 4 hours of some sort of the risk variety. If you just want to, you know,
don't
get a quick
risk.
Game in or, what?
Don't say risk. It gives me hives.
Yeah, risk. You risked
Stop
going
it.
To
Stop
work
it.
This weekend
Stop
and
it.
Got in trouble, didn't you?
Now, so, you know, sometimes you've played just about as many board games as you want to play in a given week. And, you know, because some of these things that we talk about can be really long and can be really in-depth and make your brain hurt in fairly specific ways. And you just want to kick back and relax. You still want to play some games, you know, you got some friends over. And you just want to kick back and relax and enjoy yourself and not have to think too hard. These are the kind of games that we would recommend would be these card games, these beer and pretzel filler type games.
Yeah, especially if it, you know, only takes, you know, 5, maybe 10 minutes at the most to, you know, explain to somebody how to play it. Because, like you say, some of these games, they come with a phone book for a rule book, and it can be a little difficult to get new gamers involved in some of those things. But the card games tend to be a little on the lighter side. Some of them do have some strips. How about that? Wow. I stepped on my squirrel.
You can have at the end of the show.
Strength and strength. Holy crap. I've fallen off the wagon. I have no idea what I was trying to say. Some depth and strategy to them. But for the most part, tend to be light. I'm going to stop talking now because I just can't remember what I was going to say.
Okay. Well, Gamer Nation, if you'd like any more information about any of these games that we have mentioned in this quick little overview, go to www.boardgamegeek.com and look them up and read the reviews, read the play session reports, and you know, check them out. A lot of them are very, very fun and well worth the 15 or 20 bucks you will pay in order to maintain your sanity and not have to buy a collectible card game.
Yes, because, you know, it'll only be that 15 or 20 bucks one time instead of every time you go into the game store.
Right. And with
times
that...
Times 10.
Times 10. Yes. And with that, let's move on.
On the table.
Well, we got some gaming in this week, and this is the bit where we tell you all about it.
Indeed. You know, with the holidays and everything, I just haven't had a lot of time to do a whole lot of stuff, gaming in particular. But I did come across a computer game that I had and forgot that I had, and installed back on the old hard drive Reno called Dawn of War. This is, to anybody who's not familiar with the game, it's been around for several years now, about 4 years as I recall, and is based on the Warhammer 40,000 genre of gaming. It is a real-time strategy game pitting you as the valiant, brave, heroic space marines taking on the wicked, evil Xenos known as the Orcs.
Hoorah!
Also some Chaos Space Marines and the dreaded Eldar in there. It's a neat little game. It's got some very, very interesting characteristics to it on how you play the game. It's one of the few real-time strategy games that I enjoy because it's not... you don't play the entire game just trying to farm resources and things. You have to capture some resource points in the form of, you know, you have to go out and plant a flag at this area here and maintain it. So it's, you know, kind of a King of the Hill type of thing, but the whole time you're building up new troops and new technology and things of that nature, which, of course, the enemy is doing at the same time, and there's this huge resounding clash in the middle, and, you know, bodies go flying, and it's pretty cool.
Does it have bodies in space, sir?
Well, not specifically, but, you know, there are bodies that go flying, but not necessarily in space.
Close enough.
It is pretty close.
Yeah, that's the only way to be sure.
Yeah. I reinstalled this one, and the last time I had played it was on a computer that barely ran. I had to have a new fan belt put on it, and, you know, it just wasn't running very well. I got the new shiny computer fired
fan
up
belt?
And downloaded. What's that?
A new fan belt?
A new fan belt. That's how old that computer was.
Damn. Your hamster must be gray by now.
He expired the other day, so we buried him in the backyard. Yeah, I installed it and put it on all the highest settings possible, and my computer went, is that all you got? And it just played it out really nice, and it's very shiny when you play it on a computer that'll actually run that kind of stuff. So
awesome.
I've been having fun with that. So
I'm glad you had fun this week.
What did you do?
I got tricked into playing Risk.
I'm sorry.
I am too. Yeah, I got tricked into playing Risk this week with some of the kids where I work. I was dutifully reminded why I generally dislike vanilla Risk. After about five rounds, where I couldn't really roll anything higher than a 3 for either attack or defense, the game was pretty much over. So I bowed out. But unfortunately, I was not allowed to leave the game. Or the building where the game was occurring. Or the planet. I went ahead and surrendered to the kid who was obviously going to be winning this thing. And I mean really obviously going to be winning this thing. And then he took another 12 rounds to finish the game against a kid with only 5 territories. 12 rounds. He insisted.
Oh. So you're saying you had fun this week?
I hate Vanilla Risk. I hate
no
it.
No sprinkles. No nothing.
Nothing. You know, and actually the funny thing is, quite a while ago I had tried a few rounds of Lord of the Rings Risk, the Trilogy Edition or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. And I actually kind of liked it. Because I felt like I had more control of what was going on. But yeah, Vanilla Risk is no way. Never. It'll be another 5 years before I ever forget this and sit down to try it again.
Guess I won't buy that copy I was looking at.
No, don't. Please don't. Tell me something good.
Something good. Well, I worked some eBay foo here a little while ago.
Damn you and your eBay foo.
EBay foo. I came across a little deal on eBay with some more Crimson Skies Clicks figures. I picked up seven
Frickin'
blisters
awesome.
Figures, each containing four figures.
Freaking awesome.
$20.
Did you get a rules pack?
I did get a rules pack, yes.
Awesome! You're my hero.
Got the rules pack with all the little cards and upgrades and scenarios and stuff.
I'm bringing the knee pads.
Yeah. So we'll be having some alternate universe late 30s air fighting dually goodness type stuff going on. So.
Cool. Hey, you know, we get this cast finished early enough, you and I can play tonight, too.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah. What did you bring to play tonight, by the way?
Oddly enough, I brought a little game called Kung Fu Fighting. Perhaps Ooh. You've heard of it.
Yeah, I might have recently.
I brought some planes for the Wings of War game.
So oh, that's right.
Might get some World War One.
You're ready for your spanking, in other words.
Yes, yeah. Prepared to shoot my canvas camel out of the sky.
I'm going to kill you. Awesome.
And I think there's another card game out there somewhere, probably sitting in your vicinity.
That was the Treasure and Traps thing, huh?
Traps. Yeah, that's another card game with kind of a Dungeons and Dragons twist on things where you go in and try and kill the monster and steal the treasure and stuff, but it's not nearly as annoying as that Steve Jackson game, so.
Oh, yeah, let's not even talk about that. Don't play Munchkin. Who said that? Oh, now the armed waves of Steve Jackson paratrooper ninja bots will be descending.
Yeah, coming in through the back window.
That's right. Gamer Nation, we're reaching the end of the show now, but there's still some odds and ends to take care of in a segment we call Back Chat.
At least it's not called Backwash. Bumpers! Hey, we like bumpers. I think of something I like better, but bumpers are kind of cool. Send us your bumper ideas. That's what we need is a bumper crop of bumper ideas. 30 seconds of audio can make you a Game On star. Just email your audio bumper to us at GameOn@d20radio.com, and we'll stick it in the show. Play it out to all of you of Gamer Nation. If you'd rather just make suggestions, head over to the forums at www.d20radio.com and share it with us.
Do you have questions for us? Because, boy, I sure do.
Who left the door open?
Yeah. Are you looking for game recommendations? Do you just want to kibitz a bit with us? Well, our forums are the place to go. Andy and I are happy to answer your questions and offer up advice for your game-playing enjoyment. Some of it might even be right. Just follow the community forum link at the bottom of the main page and hit us up in our questions and maybe answers thread. We'd love to hear from you.
We really would. Feedburner loves us. Feedburner. Okay. Yeah, sure, whatever. And apparently, so do you. We're averaging around, get this, 26 super duper really keen neato subscribers. Who writes this stuff?
It's like the 50s.
Why not join them?
It's the 50s all over again.
Yeah, if you listen to the cast and like what we do, go ahead, subscribe to the feed. Resistance is futile. It's really easy, and you can do it from D20 Radio main page. We're also listed on PodcastAlley.com and several other places around the intertubes, as well as having gone live on iTunes this very week.
Do it again.
What?
Live.
Live.
Yes.
On iTunes. It lives.
Excellent. Hey, guess what, Andy?
What, Brian?
We're still running our contest for that free copy of Fearsome Floors.
We are.
We are. All you have to do is go to our forums and share with us your favorite board game-related story. Tell us about the funniest thing that ever happened to you while playing a board game. Or maybe you received some sort of deep, life-changing insight. Or maybe you just had a really, really good time while playing board games. Tell us about it. Andy and I will pick our favorite and send you, absolutely free, at no cost, a brand new copy, in shrink wrap, of Fearsome Floors by Friedemann Fries. You've got a week left to enter. So head on over to the Episode 2 contest thread on the forums. You'll need to register, if you haven't already, but registration is free, too. It's like two prizes at once. Enter now.
Please. Give Brian something to do besides write me script.
Remember back to episode 0 when you said you didn't have a script? Suck it.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to retract that statement.
Neato Keen.
Oh, how come he always gets the brain?
Because I live here.
Oh, well, that explains everything. Remember, Gamer Nation, if you'd like to contact us, you can write to us at gameon@d20radio.com. You can also log on to the D20 Radio forums at d20radio.com and leave us messages there. We love feedback. Love to hear from our listeners. We're looking for all sorts of input on all sorts of topics, from t-shirt ideas to bumper suggestions and all sorts of other stuff. Head over and share your opinions with us. Who knows? We might even talk about you on the show. And we might even talk about you nicely.
I hadn't thought of that option. Well, check in next week, Gamer Nation. And until then, game on.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. All specific names, titles, or products mentioned are copyrighted by the respective rights holders. Some sounds and music are provided courtesy of SoundSnap.com and Freesound.org. Reboot is copyright Alliance Entertainment. All original content of this podcast and its related website are intellectual property of Game On and D20 Radio.
Dun 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 dun.